Did you know that up until the 20th century, scientists have always believed that the universe existed eternally? In other words, the universe had no beginning and no end. And therefore, it was thought that the existence of the universe does not need an explanation. It just exists. The burden of proof was on those who claimed otherwise. If anyone were to dispute this, he or she must come up with a scientific theory to explain how the universe would come into being. Where did matter come from? Where did energy come from? And how did time begin? Entering the 20th century, one of the most significant discoveries in cosmology was made by Edwin Hubble in 1924. Hubble discovered that there were many other galaxies outside the Milky Way. That's where we are. And for some reason, these galaxies, they were moving away from one another. The further they were apart, the greater their speed of separation. So how could we explain this? Hubble suggested that it was because space was expanding. It wasn't because of the stars, the galaxies themselves were not moving, but space, the fabric of the universe, was expanding. In 1931, a Belgian scientist, I'll try to pronounce his name, Georges Lamotte, came up with a bold theory. Since the universe was expanding, it would be logical to think that it must have been smaller in the past. And if we keep going back in time, we should come to a point in the past when the universe and everything in it was confined to a tiny little space, perhaps the size of an atom. The theory goes, from this one point came space, time, light, and matter. People would call this the Big Bang Theory. And it happened that Lamotte was also a Roman Catholic priest, so his theory was therefore met with skepticism. It was thought that he had imported religious concepts into the realm of science. It was not until 1964 when scientists discovered the cosmic microwave background radiation, a kind of radiation filling all space. The cosmic microwave background was the afterglow of the Big Bang, so it proved that the Big Bang did really happen. From that time on, it was generally accepted that the universe had a beginning. So as a Christian, I'm not threatened by any of these discoveries in cosmology. In fact, I feel excited. I feel vindicated even. What Christians have believed for 2,000 years, science finally approves. Space, time, matter, even the natural laws themselves, they all have a beginning. Since then, the Big Bang Theory has generated a lot of interest and research in cosmology. Scientists began to ask these questions. How did it begin? What were the initial conditions? They want to see a timeline. So they want to understand what happened in the fractions of a second after the Big Bang, the very first minute after the Big Bang, the first year, the first millennium, the first million year after the Big Bang. How did the universe evolve into what it is today? And their research has led to an interesting discovery. They noticed that the natural laws, like the law of gravity, Einstein's theory of relativity, the law of thermodynamics, electromagnetism, nuclear reaction, they all work so well together that life could form in the universe. People call this fine-tuning of the universe. It was as though someone had tweaked the laws of nature so that our universe would be fit for life. Let me give you a few examples. You know there are four fundamental forces of nature, right? And these forces, they act on atoms and molecules, they act on planets and stars to govern how matter interact with one another. So if one were to measure, say, the ratio between the strength of gravity and the strength of strong force. So we measure the force and we compare them and then come up with a ratio. Scientists wonder how much of this ratio can be changed and still to allow the universe to exist and life to exist. In other words, how much deviation can we tolerate? What kind of margin do we have? And the answer is, we couldn't change a tenth of its value. Not even 1 in 100. Not 1 in 1,000,000. That's 10^6. So how delicate is this ratio? If we change just one part in 10^34, okay, that's really quite small. If you modify the strength of gravity just a little bit, our universe will not exist and life cannot be formed. Similarly, if we measure the ratio between the strength of gravity and the strength of electromagnetic force, and we ask, how much of this ratio can be changed and still allow life to exist in the universe? The answer is startling. 1 part in 10^40. In other words, if we modify the strength of the electromagnetic force by the smallest amount, life cannot exist. So this is what fine-tuning means. Scientists realize that the ratios between the weak force, the strong force, the electromagnetic force, and the force of gravity must exist within very narrow ranges in order that chemical structures, biological structures, cosmological structures would be possible to support life in a stable universe. Let me give you another example. You remember protons and neutrons, right, from your high school physics. They're found where? They're found in the nucleus of an atom. Now, a neutron is heavier than a proton by 1.00138 137 841887 times. Now, if you look at the number, 1.001 is almost insignificant, right? So how about if we do a thought experiment? Let's reverse the ratio. So let's say a proton is 1.00137841887 times heavier than a neutron. Not a big deal, right? Well, in this scenario, the hydrogen atom cannot be formed. You remember hydrogen, right? The first element in the periodic table. The hydrogen atom cannot be formed. And without hydrogen, there would be no stars. And without stars, carbon and oxygen cannot be made. And guess what? Life cannot exist. So the more we look into this, the more we realize that the natural laws, the physical constants, the many inherent properties of nature, of matter, they all seem to be fine-tuned so that our universe is fit for life. One last example, okay? I'm going to finish just... one more. As we said earlier, the universe is expanding. Okay, so what is the pace of expansion? It turns out that the rate of expansion of the universe is determined by a constant in Einstein's equation of relativity. Scientists call this the cosmological constant. They give it a symbol lambda. It determines the rate of expansion of the universe. And boy, this number is extremely fine-tuned. If lambda were slightly larger, the universe would fly apart too quickly for stars and galaxies to form. And if lambda were slightly smaller, all matter would collapse back on itself. Here's the thing. How much of its value can be changed and still make life possible in the universe? Scientists believe that the value of lambda must be kept to 1 part in 10^120. That's 119 zero followed by a 1 to allow life to exist in the universe. So this is why many scientists have conceded that the natural laws, the inherent properties of matter have been fine-tuned to permit life to exist in the universe. Stephen Hawking, the renowned cosmologist, said, I quote, The remarkable fact is that the values of these numbers, i.e. the constants of nature, of physics, seem to have been very finely adjusted to make possible the development of life. And it seems clear that there are relatively few ranges of values for the numbers that would allow the development of any form of intelligent life. So as a Christian, I feel excited about this. I think the recent discoveries in cosmology has made it harder for people to claim to be an atheist. It is increasingly difficult to argue that our universe is what it is by chance. So anyway, enough about cosmology. Let's switch gear. I want to introduce another subject of science that is of great interest to me. Right now, as we speak, there are close to 6 million red blood cells circulating in your bloodstreams. The job of the red blood cells is quite simple, right? You know it. They bring oxygen from the lung to various parts of your body and transport carbon dioxide back to the lung for you to exhale. How does it work? Each red blood cell contains a protein called the hemoglobin. And each hemoglobin can carry 4 oxygen molecules. It is a very efficient means of transport. Now, I want to spend a little time to explain how the hemoglobin are manufactured in your body. Okay, it's a little bit technical, but it's also quite fascinating. So I will try my best to make it as simple to understand as possible. So here we go. When your body needs to make a protein, it must first find the blueprint. Where is the blueprint? It's in your DNA. Your DNA is like a huge library, like the Vancouver Public Library. So it contains building instructions for over 10,000 kinds of protein in your body. So to make a hemoglobin, you visit the library, go to the 8th floor, you go to the east wing, and then find the 3rd row, the 4th shelf, and then find a manual that contains the assembly instructions of hemoglobin. So you find a manual, you open the manual, you read the instructions, you copy it to your notebook, and your notebook, and this notebook is called, some of you may know this already, the mRNA. So once you have the instructions, you bring the mRNA to the protein factory. As you arrive, a professional translator will be there to greet you. His name is Ribosome. Now, we need the ribosome because he is the only one who knows how to read the coding on your mRNA. So starting from the beginning, he will read 3 codes at a time. Let's say the first 3 codes represent a type A amino acid. So the ribosome will admit a type A amino acid from outside and retain it. Then it moves on to read the next 3 codes, and this time the codes translate into a type F amino acid. So the ribosome receives a type F amino acid from outside and bind it to the type A before. Okay? Then it reads the next 3 codes. This time the codes translate into a type M amino acid. So the ribosome receives a type M and bind it to the type F. Okay? So by repeating this process, an amino acid chain is being built. The first one is a type A, then the next one is type F, and then a type M, a type P, and a type K, and so on. This goes on until it reaches the last instruction on your mRNA, and at that point, you have finished building an amino acid chain. And guess how many amino acids have you bound together? 146. So when I look at this process, I find it hard to believe that nature could have produced such a complicated structure by chance. Myself, coming from a computer engineering background, I immediately recognized 2 software programs running. Okay, the first program accesses a database, the DNA, find the right section for hemoglobin, then copy the instruction to the mRNA, then send it to the ribosome. The second program picks up the mRNA, read the instructions 3 codes at a time, receive the corresponding type of amino acid, then bind it to the amino acid chain And then repeat this process until the end of instructions. So it seems obvious to me that there must be a programming design here, because I see reading and copying of information, coding and decoding information, input and output of information. What if I tell you that there are actually 20 different types of amino acid in your body? So A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P, Q, R, S, T. With 20 kinds to choose from, one must line up 146 amino acids in the right order to build a chain. Suppose I don't give you the assembly instructions. I let you try as many times as you like, take as long as you want. How many millennia will it take for you to get one chain right? You know what I mean? Okay, so the first step is this, and come the second step, okay? We have a chain. It's not a hemoglobin yet. In the second step, the amino acid chain is coiled up into a helix form. It's like a spiral staircase. This is followed by a third step where the chain will be folded into a three-dimensional structure. Just like in origami, you fold a piece of paper following specific steps to make a paper crane, to make a frog, to make a lion, and so on. In protein synthesis, the amino acid chain must be folded into a unique 3D structure for it to function correctly. Fourth step. So you know how in advanced origami, you can fold two pieces of paper separately into two different shapes. Perhaps one become a head, the other become a tail. And then you combine these two shapes together to create a dinosaur. If you pull the dinosaur by its tail, the head will move sideways, back and forth, back and forth. This is advanced origami. Okay. The making of hemoglobin is similar. You combine four folded amino acid structures together to form an even more complex structure. Then you add four passenger seats to the structure. Voila, you have an Uber capable of carrying four oxygen molecules. So can you imagine just one simple protein, the second most common in your body, has such a complex manufacturing process? In terms of function, it's simple, right? It's just carry oxygen from the lung to your body and then transport carbon dioxide back to the lung. But in terms of manufacturing, it's extremely complex. First, you need to search the database to find the information. You copy it, you edit it, you transfer it, and then you receive it at the other end. You decode it, then build an amino acid chain, 146 parts in a particular order. Then you wind the chain into a helix form. Then you fold it into the unique 3D shape. And then you combine four substructures into a larger structure. So I tell you, as an engineer, this is a marvelous piece of software and hardware engineering. Mind you, this is just one protein, by far not the most complex. There are literally 10,000 kinds of protein in your body, and each one has a different instruction set and a different manufacturing process. So it is not surprising that in the last decade or so, biologists begin to wonder, can the kind of fine-tuning that scientists discovered in cosmology be also found in biology? As a Christian, I'm excited about the discovery in biology, because these days, it has become harder for anyone to claim to be an atheist. If you look at the science, it is difficult to argue that life could have come into existence by chance. As I'm doing the research for this sermon, a Bible passage comes to mind, and it says, it's from Psalm 8. It says, "Lord, our Lord, how majestic is your name in all the earth. You have set your glory in the heavens. When I consider your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars, which you have set in place, what is mankind that you are mindful of them? Human beings that you care for them. This poem was written 3,000 years ago. The poet couldn't have known anything about galaxies and proteins and amino acids, four fundamental forces, relativity, the Big Bang, cosmological constant, fine-tuning of the universe. But he saw something that many of us had chosen to ignore. As he walked into the wilderness in the middle of the night, looking up into the heavens, watching the beautiful sky, the stars and the galaxies there, he remembered how small and insignificant was his own life. Comparing to the ageless and boundless cosmos, he was like a dust particle. I mean, how long can a person live? 100 years? That's pretty good, right? But in the history of the universe, 13.8 billion years. That's just the blink of an eye. Yet we like to put so much emphasis on ourselves. Everything about us is a big deal. Well, we are not a big deal. In the cosmic scale, we exist for a moment, then we go out immediately. Some people like to brag about their house, their yard, the cool places they've been, and so on. But this Earth that we live in is just one tiny planet, two-thirds of the way out, in one of the spiral arms of the Milky Way. And the Milky Way is just one of 200 billion galaxies in the universe. Perhaps one day, someone will invent a starship capable of traveling at the speed of light. Okay, that's the fastest one can go. Do you know how long it will take for this starship to travel from one end of the Milky Way to the other end? 100,000 years at the speed of light. And guess how long it will take to travel from one end of the universe to the other end? 93 billion years at the speed of light. That's how big the universe is. For me, the day I die, when my family perform a cremation on my body, all that remains can be put inside a little container called the urn. We are dust particles. The poet was right. When I consider your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars, which you have set in place, what is mankind? How small and how insignificant our lives are. So as he gazed at the stars, he reflected upon creation, life, people, nations, empires. Something else came to mind. Relationships. What is mankind that you are mindful of them, and human beings that you care for them? We are just the blink of an eye in an ageless universe. We are dust particles in a boundless space. So why would anyone bother to put this incredibly complex and sophisticated design inside our body? Try studying the immune system, the digestive system, respiratory system, reproductive system, muscular system, skeletal system, excretion system. Try studying the nervous system. Each one is a universe on its own. And putting them all in here is like having multiple universes running simultaneously inside our body. And they are all fine-tuned to work together so that we can sit here to contemplate the mystery of the universe. What are mankind that you are mindful of them, human beings that you care for them? The poet saw something that we have chosen to ignore. Because we're busy doing important stuff like getting good grades, trying to land on a good job, pleasing our boss, earning a good salary, finding a girlfriend, finding a boyfriend, playing video games, or else watching Netflix. But if some of you are seriously thinking about life, you can learn a lesson from the poet. Take a day off. Get out of town. Go up the mountain. Walk a trail. Slow down. Gaze upon the heavens. Ask yourself, why am I here? What is the meaning? What meaning does my momentary existence have? I brought nothing into the world. I can't take anything away. And when I'm gone, I won't even leave a trace in the universe. So how is it that the universe has been fine-tuned so that I can arrive, so that I can exist? How is it even a drop of blood in my body has such a wonderful and elegant design? If you ask me, my answer is, the evidence seems to indicate that this world has been created by a wise and powerful being, one whom I call God. Everywhere I look, whether I look up the heavens or deep inside my body, I see design. I see order. I see fine-tuning. Someone has put this together. And what is even more interesting, aside from the cosmos, aside from protein synthesis, is the human desire to seek truth, goodness, and beauty. I mean, have you ever wondered, why do human beings seek truth? Why? Why do we invent logic? Why do we invent mathematics? Why do we study physics? Why are we curious about the universe? Why do we spend $9 billion and 20 years to build a telescope? We put it into orbit only to point it outward to the outer space. Why? Why do we value goodness over evil? Why do we care about justice? Why do we study ethics? Why do you have an innate sense of right and wrong? Why do you appreciate beauty? Why do we feel sentimental by looking at the sunset? Why do we go for a hike just to see the fall colors? Why do we stop when we see a snowflake on the palm of my hand? Why do human beings seek truth, goodness, and beauty? Why are we capable of love? Why would someone out of love sacrifice his own life to protect another person? Why would someone out of love share his possession with someone else? If the universe had a creator, why did he put a desire in us to pursue truth, goodness, and beauty? Why did he give us a capacity to love? Well, I have an explanation. God has created us to seek Him, the source of all truth, the source of beauty, the source of goodness. God has created us to receive His love and to love Him in return. I think Augustine was right when he said, "You have made us for yourself, O Lord, and our heart is restless until it rests in you." You have made us for yourself, O Lord, and our heart is restless until it rests in you. Maybe the restlessness that we have felt is meant to lead us to the Creator. Perhaps it is meant to guide us, guide you, guide me to God. So will you give Christianity a chance? Will you invite God into your life? In a moment, I'm going to say a prayer, and this is how I'm going to pray. God, if you really exist, I want to find you. I want to know you. I want to experience your love and your care. Will you please come into my heart, come into my life, and let me find rest in your presence? So if you feel comfortable, follow me and pray in your heart. Okay, so let's bow our head. Let's pray together. God, if you exist, I want to find you. I want to know you. I want to experience your love and your care. Will you please come into my heart? Let me find rest in your presence. Amen.